is a stockpile. Therefore, every concern would be removed. It is really within the reach if President Trump is going to have diplomacy succeed.
We've just spoken with Ambassador Mohammed Mirandi in Brussels, who helped to negotiate an Iran nuclear deal back in 2005. Mohammed Mirandi, who is a professor of English literature and Orientalism at the University of Tehran, part of the nuclear deal negotiations in 2015. And we just heard from Ambassador Hossein Mousavian, who was involved in negotiations in 2005. I want to bring in a third Iranian, an Iranian-American, a voice from civil society here in the U.S., and the call to stop the war on Iran. That's the name of a petition that's gathered more than 1,000 signatures by academics based in the U.S., Europe, and Iran. It reads in part, quote, Netanyahu and Trump are dragging the U.S. into Israel's illegal war in Iran, which will cause more destruction and further destabilize the Middle East for the foreseeable future, unquote. The petition also notes, quote, this aggression is also a calculated attempt to deflect attention from the ongoing genocide it's committing in Gaza and to unleash a cascade of catastrophes that aim to turn Iran into a failed state, unquote. The petition continuing, the Middle East is replete with tragic cases of societies descending into chaos following foreign interventions. Libya, Iraq, Syria, Yemen, Afghanistan. For more, we're joined by one of the petition's organizers, the Iranian-American professor Kaveh Ehsani, associate professor of international studies at DePaul University in Chicago, also contributing editor at Merit and on the board of its directors, in regular communication with activists, journalists and scholars in Iran. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Professor Ehsani. Explain this 1,000-person signed petition and why you're acting now.
Glad to be here. Thank you. The point is that I agree with most of what was said in terms of, the international situation. The key point is that there's a tendency to speak in the name of Iranians in general, you know, represent them as if though they want this regime, they don't want the regime, they want forceful external military intervention to replace the regime or not. Our point was, as scholars of Iran, as people who've been studying it, who've worked there, who've done field work, who've lived and worked in Iran, is that nobody can at this point speak for Iranians as a whole. Your first speaker, Mr. Mirandi, pointed out that there's a universal consensus among Iranians to support the establishment, the Islamic Republic, that Evin prison is, you know, in fact, full of petty criminals. Nothing is further from the truth, and this is, laughable as a claim. It is full of political prisoners, many of them waiting execution for protesting the regime. But the point is that Iranians can speak, and as a diverse society of 90 million, they have multiple views. Some indeed support the current establishment, many do not. But the point is that there is a consensus against this war of aggression from outside because it's affecting everyone. And Iran is a society that has lived already through one devastating war, the Iran-Iraq War of the 1980s. There is solidarity, there is horizontal mutual help, but the fact is that sanctions and war only immiserate people, only destroy civil society and the existing organizations that people have built as ways of pushing back against repressions, against authoritarianism. So what we see, what we support effectively here in our statement is that we should really put our belief and support behind civil society organizations in Iran, trade unions, nurses, pensioners, feminists working in Balochistan, in and other active civil society organizations that are first opposing the war, as fully realizing that what this is doing is immiserating further the lives of ordinary people, people making it harder to actually organized, to actually voice their opinions, to voice their positions. And secondly, it will only open the hands of the regime to accuse anybody who is objecting to the current situation as a fifth columnist, as they are doing. For example, the current Iranian regime has targeted Afghan refugees, the most vulnerable strata of Iranian society, as a potential fifth column. And they're expelling them even more forcefully than they were before. If you think ICE is doing worse, you know, awful things in the United States, the Iranian regime is doing the same thing with Afghan refugees at this point. So the only chance that we have of actually establishing a democratic polity in Iran, whether this leads to the regime change, whether it leads to its transformation from within, you know, through reform, through negotiation, or, you know, through more radical means, that's up to Iranian people inside. External military interventions will only destroy the possibility of democracy. And I think
we have 20 seconds.
You know, but this was the gist of our statement, and we really stand with civil society organizations in Iran, and I think we should condemn this war no matter what, but this is not in support of the existing Islamic Republic.
Kaveh Ehsani, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Associate Professor of International Studies at DePaul University in Chicago. He helped organize the Stop the War on Iran petition that has already more than 1,000 signatures. We'll link to it at democracynow.org. When we come back, we'll speak with a former Israeli peace negotiator. Stay with us. Then Mahmoud Khalil, in his own words, free. Stay with us.
The misanthropic, misbegotten merchants of gloom, who look into their crystal balls and prophesy our doom. Let the death knell chime, it's the end of time. Let the cynics put their blinkers on and toast our decline. Don't become demoralized.
Tomorrow's going to be a better day by Billy Bragg, performing in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Well, following the U.S. strikes on the Iranian nuclear facilities, the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke in glowing terms about President Trump and said all their goals will be achieved.
Regarding Fordo, I believe we must take our hats off to our great friend, my close friend, President Trump, for the excellent work done by the U.S. military and the U.S. Air Force. We commend their achievement. It caused a very serious blow there, a very significant one. We will, of course, assess everything. In any case, we will ensure there is no threat from these nuclear facilities. We will do whatever is necessary to achieve the goals we set. And we will achieve them all.
For more, we're joined in London by Daniel Levy, president of the U.S. Middle East Project, former Israeli peace negotiator under Israeli Prime Ministers Ehud Barak and Yitzhak Rabin. Thank you, Daniel, for being with us. We only have a few minutes, but if you can respond as Netanyahu praised President Trump for being strong, and President Trump, up until this point, first said this isn't about regime change, then very clearly said it is about regime change. Your response?
Netanyahu's purpose was to drag Trump in. That was the singular goal, really, to make this America's war. Israel doesn't care. In fact, it prefers America to be less popular, more hated in the region, because Israel's project is to be a regional hegemon that can only happen with America in order not so much to do what it's doing to Iran, but in order to continue to pursue the ethnic cleansing, dispossession, displacement, apartheid and genocide against the Palestinian people. That is not a project that has a soft power component. It only has power, hard power. It's like Elizabeth Warren said, I have a plan for that when confronted with everything. Israel acts like it has a bomb for that, whatever the question is. And so, the danger now is that having brought the US into this, Israel will seek to go further up the escalatory ladder, go up the ladder of its objectives, and really bring the idea of regime change, which I don't think even it believes in, some kind of neat change. It wants the chaos, it wants the failed state. in a country of 90 million. That's a threat to the region and beyond. It hopes it can drag the Americans further in. It can get them on this regime change track. And at the moment, Israel looks at it and it sees President Trump wearing a Made in Israel gimp suit. So why not carry on up that ladder? And it also looks at this, and Netanyahu here is taking something of a risk because he's already got something of a win. But I think he looks at it and says, this is the moment. I had the previous administration, President Biden, do something which was optimistic, even by the standards of the peculiarity and exceptionality of the Israel-US relationship. I had a Democrat president support my genocidal war. Now I have a Republican president ready to be part of my war against Iran. And what we're seeing from the Democrats, I think we have to acknowledge, is they seem to be owning the mantle of the thinking person's war party, which is just so short of what is needed. The comments from them have been so little, so late. But this is a very dangerous escalation to be on. We've already heard your guest speaking about the dangers of proliferation well beyond this. We see how dangerous it is in the region. And the rest of the world is looking at this and saying, what lessons do we learn? That America uses negotiations as a ruse, that America is pulled into a war by an ally. And people probably didn't hear, but I'm going to tell you what the Chinese representative said at the UN, because this is how America looks in the world now, and this is how China is positioning itself. China stood up as the leader of multilateralism, diplomacy, and international law at the Security Council, and America violated all of those things.
Daniel Levy, I want to thank you for being with us, president of the U.S. Middle East Project, former Israeli peace negotiator under two Israeli prime ministers, speaking to us from London. Coming up next, Mahmoud Khalil is free. Stay with us. Singer Emel Mafluthi performing at the People's Graduation for Mahmoud Khalil last month. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Columbia University graduate, Palestinian student protest leader Mahmoud Khalil has been reunited with his wife and newborn son after being released on bail by a federal judge Friday after spending over 100 days in an ICE jail. He was seized by federal agents March 8th. His wife, Dr. Noor Abdullah, a U.S. citizen, was 8 months pregnant at the time. Mahmoud spoke briefly Saturday after flying from Louisiana to Newark Airport, joined by Democratic Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Democracy Now! Was at Newark Airport.
We're at Newark Airport, and we're waiting for Mahmoud Khalil to come out. He has just landed. His plane was diverted to Philadelphia, then took off again, is at Newark. Right now, he's playing with his baby Dean. He's reunited with his family, and he's about to walk into the press scrum. And there are a number of people here who are here to greet him, playing drums. They have flowers for him. He's coming out.
Well, first, friends, thank you so much for everything.
Not only
for today, it's just for every day. Like, just your words of support, your messages have kept me going. Still, the fight is far from over. The genocide is still happening in Gaza. Israel is still waging a full war against Palestinians across Palestine. The U.S. government is funding this genocide, and Columbia University is investing in this genocide. This is why I was protesting. This is why I will continue to protest with every one of you. Not only if they threaten me with detention, even if they would kill me, I would still speak up for Palestine. Again, I just want to go back and just continue the work that I was already doing, advocating for Palestinian rights, a speech that should actually be celebrated rather than punished, as this administration wants to do. But we'll take a few questions.
Mahmoud, what would you say to the Trump administration, because they wanted to keep you detained? What is your message for President Trump?
Just the fact that I am here, it's a message. The fact that all these attempts to suppress pro-Palestine voices have failed now. So this is the message. My existence is a message. The Palestinian existence is a message to this administration.
Mahmoud, how does it feel to be free? How does it feel to be free?
To be honest, I'm I'm still trying to just comprehend that. Of course, it feels great. When I was on the inside, I was free. It's just I was locked up. The fact that they put me in that place, that didn't mean that I was not free. I continued to advocate for Palestinians, for the immigrants who are left behind in that facility. The 1,200 men who, all of them, are incredible men, who the Trump administration are trying to portray as whether criminals or just like illegals, as they say, and as I said yesterday, whether you are a citizen, an immigrant, anyone on this land, you're not illegal. That doesn't make you less of a human. And this is what the administration is trying to do: to dehumanize me, to dehumanize the immigrants, to dehumanize anyone who actually does not agree with what the administration is doing.
Thank you, everyone. First and foremost, I think we speak on behalf of so many people across this country, across the state of New York, but also across so many communities in the United States, in welcoming Mahmoud home. To be here and to be reunited with his wife and his newborn son. Mahmoud Khalil was imprisoned for 104 days by this administration, by the Trump administration, with no grounds and for political reasons. Because Mahmoud Khalil is an advocate for Palestinian human rights, he has been accused baselessly of horrific allegations simply because the Trump administration and our overall establishment disagrees with his political speech. This was a form, his detention by ICE, being taken from his home, as well as other advocates, Ms. Ozturk in Boston, Massachusetts, ripped off of the street, being taken is wrong. It is illegal. It is a violation of his First Amendment rights. It is an affront to every American, and we will not allow and we will continue to resist the politicization and the continued political persecution that ICE is engaged in.
I'm Bahar Azmi, AZMY, for the Center for Constitutional Rights, one of his attorneys. This is an incredibly significant and important victory, although one that came far too late. And as much as we're celebrating, I think we can't fully let go of the outrage that Mahmoud had to fight for so long and so hard against this outrageous and unconstitutional government conduct by the administration, namely to persecute him simply for advocacy for Palestine and dissenting from United States foreign policy. I think Mahmoud and Palestinian advocates are still the tip of the authoritarian spear with this administration. But collectively, I think people want to keep up the resistance and keep up the fight for justice in Palestine.
Ramzi Qasim, Clear Project, CUNY School of Law. We're attorneys for Mr. Khalil.
Can you first respond to Mahmoud's being freed. Tell us what took so long. What was the decision that the judge made? What was it based on after these months?
The district judge, quite appropriately, yesterday, took a hard and studied look at all of the factors that govern release and found that there was absolutely no basis, none. He was unequivocal. Mahmoud is not a danger of any sort. He's not a flight risk of any kind. And there's absolutely no justification for his detention. The judge did this meticulously, methodically, in a two-hour hearing that should withstand any sort of appellate scrutiny. The fundamental reality remains that Mahmoud Khalil was detained by this administration in an attempt to make an example out of him, in an attempt to stifle speech that frankly should be celebrated and commended, speech in defense of the human rights of Palestinians, their dignity, their right to life, speech in opposition to an ongoing genocide. And for that, the administration tried to make an example out of him and tried to establish a template that it would then apply to any other set of issues that it happens to disagree with. That, as we've seen today, is failing. It is backfiring. Mahmoud is out, of course, and he is, as you heard, uncowed, unbowed. He's going to resume his activism. But he's not alone. More important, hundreds of thousands of others have expressed not just their solidarity with him, but their solidarity with the Palestinian people. And this is not a movement that the Trump administration is going to be able to deport its way out of. It is very much an American movement.
Does Mahmoud face deportation today? Explain the difference between the two courts.
Well, the simplest way to think about it is that the immigration case is the Trump administration's case. It's the case that they want because it's before an immigration judge who isn't really a judge at all. An immigration judge is a DOJ employee, Department of Justice employee, who serves at the pleasure of the president and can be fired by the president at any time. The case in federal court in New Jersey, on the other hand, now that's Mahmoud's case. That's the case that he brought to vindicate his own constitutional rights in front of an independent judge who does not serve at the pleasure of the president, who has lifetime tenure, and who, as was demonstrated yesterday, can issue rulings that are critical of the president. The contrast was extremely clear yesterday. You had a federal judge agreeing with Mahmoud and vindicating his constitutional rights against the Trump administration, and at the same time you had an immigration judge who's an employee of the Trump administration agreeing with the Trump administration. There could be no clearer illustration of the difference between the administrative immigration proceedings and Mahmoud's constitutional case in federal court.
So does he face deportation?
He is in ongoing removal proceedings. We will continue to fight that fight, and that's why the fight is not over. But the latest round of this fight was resoundingly won by Mahmoud Khalil.
Ramzi, you were there when Mahmoud was freed. Can you describe what that was like? And also, making your way from Gina, Louisiana, you flew from Dallas to Newark.
Amy, I was there with Mahmoud. We were listening to the hearing in court together in Gina, in a room over a phone. And, when the ruling came down...
From the bench at that moment?
Yeah. When the ruling came down over that phone, he and I jumped up. We hugged each other. We screamed. We shouted. And then we started planning. And, we drove through the night to catch the first flight out. We haven't slept, but we're happy, and I can't imagine his happiness at embracing his wife and child and their happiness. And I'm just ecstatic that they're together, that they get this time to be together. They should have never been separated, of course, but now they are together, and he is in a much better position, not just to fight these legal cases that we've been talking about, but also to resume his all-important political work as an outspoken advocate for the most basic human rights for the Palestinian people.
We are standing at Newark Airport, where Mahmoud Khalil has just arrived, reuniting with his wife, Dr. Noor Abdullah, and his almost two-month-old son, Dean, whose birth he missed as he was jailed for more than 100 days in Gina, Louisiana. And as we stand here at Newark Airport, we're in Terminal A, where he came out and welcomed his supporters and talked to the press. We're standing in front of a mural by the Ecuadorian muralist Leica Nuna Yawar. It is a mural that celebrates immigrants in the United States. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!
So that was Saturday. On Sunday, Mahmoud Khalil addressed over 1,000 supporters as well as the press outside the Cathedral of St. John the Divine here in Manhattan, blocks from the campus of Columbia University.
I would like to salute the courage of all students at Columbia and across the nation. These students who continue to protest, I want to honor especially my friends at Columbia University. Especially those who are currently battling expulsion and suspension for their consciousness stand. As many of you know, the Board of Trustees at Columbia, the shameful Board of Trustees at Columbia, is currently attempting to expel 15 more students and to suspend 10 others, basically stealing their future, their degrees, their labor, merely because these students are not afraid. These students are not afraid to stand for Palestine. Columbia University will do everything and anything it can to ensure that the words Free Palestine are not uttered anywhere near it. But while we are here, free Palestine!
Free Palestine!
Viva Palestina!
Viva Palestina!
I hope that Columbia University heard your chants. In fact, even today, Columbia University refused to allow this press conference and rally to be held at the gates. Just so that we cannot remind them that they fund the killing in Gaza. Well, who is Mahmoud Khalil? That's what the administration has tried its best to portray me as, someone who's violent. Mahmoud Khalil is a human rights defender. Mahmoud Khalil is a freedom fighter. Mahmoud Khalil is a refugee. Mahmoud Khalil is a father and husband. And above all, Mahmoud Khalil is Palestinian. Mahmoud Khalil is a Palestinian who refused to remain silent while watching a genocide in Palestine. A genocide that's, of course, committed by the genocidal state of Israel, that's funded by the U.S. government, that's invested by Columbia University.
Mahmoud Khalil addressing over 1,000 supporters as well as the press outside the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in Manhattan. He then led a march as the marchers held the banner, "Welcome Home, Mahmoud." He wore a Palestinian flag as a cape, and they marched from 110th Street, where the cathedral is, to Columbia University at 116th Street. Mahmoud Khalil still faces deportation, but now can deal with these proceedings as a free man, with his wife, Dr. Noor Abdallah, and his newborn son, Dean Khalil. That does it for our show. Special thanks to Laura Bastios. To see our job openings, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of CanadaLand, Canada's only media criticism program.
Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
This is Mac DeMarco, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby, the Chablis.